This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 13th of June, 2023. This melt-up mode continues. A strong close in U.S. equities yesterday with the S&P 500 clearing that prior previous high on, I think it was August of last year. So it's the highest close for the S&P 500 since April of last year. Very impressive price action. And I'm beginning to wonder, Peter, if this is starting to tilt the odds of what the FOMC does tomorrow, simply because, as we discussed in our little internal meeting this morning, whether they had any interest in seeing something pumped up too big and then risking some sort of bubble-like situation in the other side of that, in addition to what is an incoming recession at some point in the U.S. Briefly, want to remind listeners to have a look at our latest listeners survey out on SurveyMonkey. We have the link there on slide two. We have it in the podcast description. Do have a look at that. We're getting plenty of answers rolling in, talking about the status of this market, whether it is a melt-up, for example, and a couple of other questions for you. And it'll shape our content for the next two Fridays listener edition podcast. So please do have a look at that survey. So, Peter, your take here. I mean, I put up the sorted the slide two in today's slide deck, the performance of our equity theme baskets on the month to date. Some pretty amazing performances, and this was already on top of what has been a strong year for the market. You have to wonder, is the Fed going to fan the flames of this, I guess, with a pause today, or are they going to try to talk a little bit tougher on the guidance, and will the market listen?
That's a very good question. It really feels like we talked about it yesterday. Bubble dynamics. Definitely an echo back to 2021 and 2000. As had a discussion with some of my colleagues before we went into the studio. I mean, I think what's fascinating about this bubble is that back in 2000 and 2021, you had a backdrop of a very strong economy. There were a sense of optimism in a different way than what you're looking at today. So what we have today is, like, I would argue 8-9 out of 10 economists are calling for a recession. You have a lot of signals coming out of the bond market that is suggesting that the economy is slowing down. And then inside that macro framework, you have a bubble blowing, and that's on the backside of the most aggressive policy interest rate hike we have ever seen in maybe 50, 60 years in the US. I think it's just fascinating. And I think it speaks, John, to, you know, that bubbles and what we're seeing in markets right now is a social phenomenon. And that's also why I will come back to, I mean, the reason why I have been banging on this for a couple of weeks that this was developing is that you can just see it. If you go around on social media, you can see what this AI frenzy is all about. It is hyped like nothing I've ever seen before. Mm. It's quite spectacular. But, you know, coming a little bit down to earth, John, I think you're right. I mean, the absolute melt-up scenario here would be, let's say, a positive surprise, so 0.3% month-on-month gain in the U.S. core inflation today at 12:30 GMT on the U.S. May inflation report. If we get that, and the Fed, makes no change, I think you have the perfect setup for a build-up scenario. I think the market could go absolutely bonkers. And as you say, you and I had the discussion, and maybe you want to say a few words on it. But I think it would be a catastrophe if you have a bubble, getting bigger in the U.S. And if the U.S. economy goes into a recession, I think that would be a very ugly double whammy that will be very difficult to contain for the central bank.
Yeah, we have to remember the last two major, if we don't even include the pandemic, which is such an unusual event, it's hard to consider the idea of a repeat of that. But the prior two big corrections in the market and in the economy were essentially triggered in large part by the asset markets, by the huge dot-com and tech and dot-com bubble bust, and the amazing bubble in tech spending, and then the sort of the psychological wipeout of seeing your stock portfolios wiped out. There's a huge popular participation in equities at that round, and then it was the housing bubble. There's more popular participation in housing than there was in equities. Equities weren't such a big situation in 2007-08 when it was the whole systemic crisis around the global financial system. So, yeah, I mean, the Fed has to pay attention to this third rail or this third mandate, which is financial stability slash What are the dynamics of asset markets? So the housing market, not so much here because, of course, these interest rates have affected the housing market, which has stabilized, some believe, to a greater degree than they would have thought possible. But in other asset markets, I think you're right. There's another risk growing here. Briefly on FX and something adding a bit to the positive mood overnight, clearly, was China, the PBOC, moving to cut the reverse repo rate by 10 basis points. This was not at all expected. Their regularly scheduled meeting to adjust their normal medium-term policy or medium-term facility rate, loan rate, is not until Thursday. So clearly, the market's thinking this is a tip-off to a move there. We've seen, of course, weak Chinese data of late, and this is move towards stimulus is something the market really likes. Had a strong Asian session. And then looking at the FX market, slide 4, you see the dollar CNH extending a bit higher here. Despite the fact that the dollar is kind of on its back foot coming into today's key U.S. CPI data point, but it's quite a mixed picture. Look at that dollar CNH. It shows you it's all about the weak Chinese renminbi there. Elsewhere, somewhat on its back foot besides perhaps dollar yen, we have sterling surging today again after a big correction yesterday on despite a Bank of England person out saying that, that she's worried about inflation, sterling versus the dollar pumping up higher, and then really correcting badly ahead of today's figures from the labor market, which were extremely strong. Big revisions higher on the payrolled employees after a very odd one-off drop in the April numbers to minus 136K. That was revised up to plus 7K, and then May came in with a small gain of 23,000. Also, the claims, they were adjusted much lower from a slightly worrying figure, to say the least, the high of the cycle in April, cut in half to 23K from 47K originally on the claims. And the May number coming in slightly negative, minus 13K. So fewer claims in May. And then finally, I know I'm running through a lot of figures here, but it just scrambles the picture on what it was a very concerning April report. We have the April earnings coming in. These are a month delayed relative to some of the other numbers. 7.2% annualized earnings growth ex bonus. That's only 0.1% below the high of the cycle from May of last year. How are you going to get to this 1% to 2% inflation target that the Bank of England is talking about when wages are growing at 7% per year? So interesting setup, to say the least, coming into today's CPI. Ole, China means commodities, and when China is looking at adjusting rates and thoughts about Chinese stimulus, we're going to look at Chinese-sensitive commodities. So it looks like the market is picking up on this a bit overnight here.
Indeed, it is, and it's interesting also to note that that as you just talked about the renminbi, the weakness we're seeing there, that normally renminbi weakness does not go well with copper strength, and right now we're actually seeing copper moving up at the same time as the renminbi is weakening, and that does really indicate the market is looking for more. And there's an article out on Bloomberg today, basically I highlight the title there, that they're weighing more broad stimulus, and the announcement could come as early as Friday. The economy is clearly not at a place where the government feel comfortable of seeing it. So more to come perhaps. And if we should see that, then just look at the inventory levels in copper. They're really quite weak right now, especially in China. So that could have quite an impact. So keep an eye on that 382.20 level. If we do break that or get it close above the 200-day moving average, then potentially some more momentum coming into the market.
And that certainly affects the outlook for the Aussie, which has been revived a little bit overnight as well. I think clearly from that data point, also very sensitive on the commodity side to metals. And then the grains market. We're concerned about the Northern Hemisphere growing season, I guess, is one of the key things that's seen this considerable backup here, at least in corn.
Yeah, we highlighted that last week, and we put out an article, an update about it. And on Monday night, we have the usual update from the USDA, crop conditions across the U.S. Fields. And we saw another drop in corn condition and soybean conditions. It's not visible on this one because it looks like it's within the five-year range, but obviously these reporting weeks start at different times, so it's a little bit difficult to put into an exact perspective. But it's one of the worst conditions, especially in soybeans, in 8 years, and corn is well below the average for this time of year. So we really need to watch closely the weather developments over the next month or so, because it could have quite an impact on the production level this autumn. We are seeing that December contracts. So that's the new crop contracts, both in corn and wheat and soybeans picking up at this point. Basically, the market is starting to worry about the supply outlook. And also in Europe, the war in Ukraine is intensifying. The damp burst last week is having a negative impact on wheat production there. At the same time, the drought we're seeing across northern Europe is also currently impacting Russia. So Russia was a key reason why wheat prices dumped during the past year, simply because of ample supply. And if Russia run into a dry summer, then that could reverse as well. So simply a sector we need to keep a close eye on.
All right. And then from copper to corn and now to uranium. Not one we often cover. We've covered it a few times, though, but there's a lot of interest in the future of nuclear power here. So what's your focus here on slide 7?
Yeah, it just highlights the incredible diversity of commodities from all different sectors. And yes, the uranium has been on fire recently, and it got an additional boost within the past couple of weeks, with the U.S. About to pass some legislation supporting and accelerating the expansion of their nuclear power industry, and that has really been taken as a key sign for the market. So uranium prices are moving higher. I just put in on the right hand side uranium spot uranium prices and the Cameco in Canada. Cameco reached a 12-year high yesterday, and it is obviously one of the companies that looks at to benefit from rising demand for uranium and also the building of nuclear power plants. And on the left-hand side, just one of the major ETFs tracking a basket of uranium stocks. So you can see that's also in looking a bit feisty here in breakout mode.
Okay. Also looking feisty are Oracle shares. We roll forward to the stocks to watch. Reading a headline here, Peter, Oracle pushes to record high as AI frenzy spurs cloud demand. So it looks like Oracle's riding a wave of this AI hype and, I guess, you know, actual increase in business, of course, as well. We can't be 100% skeptical. So take us through what the angle is there and your other stocks to watch.
I'm laughing when you reading up this headline, John. I mean, I'm just shaking my head. I mean, Oracle, it's like, they have nothing related to AI whatsoever.
No, I was wondering as well. It's a database company, yeah, right? It's mostly corporate infrastructure, and although they have managed to, they did manage to cobble together quite a breakout of the range back in last year, I suppose, yeah, it was, or a couple years ago.
This we're talking about a company that was not dying. That's the wrong word, but it was like
stagnant,
and they stuck in the mud. They completely missed the whole cloud push, and they finally came around, and you know, Larry Ellison, the founder and CEO, has always been mocking the cloud industry, saying, "Oh, we had it before we even invented the word cloud, et cetera, et cetera." And but in 2022, they came around and they made a massive acquisition of a company called Cerner, which is the U.S. leading software maker for healthcare applications and the healthcare sector and infrastructure play as well, and that gave the company some muscle in the cloud business. And if you look at the Oracle results, which were better than expected when they reported last night, both in revenue and earnings, it was driven by the cloud services segment. And the shares were up 5% in the primary session. They extended the rally 3% in the extended trading, and that was because the Q1 revenue outlook was put out at 8 to 10% versus the estimates of 8%, so that in the low end of that range. So that was a positive surprise. And they also, Katz, which is the CEO of the company, she came out with saying that you know, the cloud business should be able to extend the current revenue growth rate for entire of the next year. So so positive tunes from Oracle, but I'm laughing. They have nothing to do with AI. They might be able to implement it in some parts of the business, but it certainly not is the driving factor of their business. Going to, you know, we're staying with the technology theme on stocks to watch today on slide 8. Intel is another company worth watching today. News coming out, I think it was the Financial Times that had that report that the SoftBank. So if you remember back, you ARM Holdings is the leading chip designing and patent holder of critical designs for microchips in the world. They were initially, they were a publicly listed company, the London Stock Exchange. It was one of the best performing stocks over an entire decade. Phenomenal business model. It's a royalty-based business model. Perfect. It was acquired by SoftBank, and I think it was a year ago, maybe 1.5 years ago, NVIDIA were bidding for ARM Holdings. It was seen as you know, the most perfect acquisition if NVIDIA could get that. They would really create a stronghold and potentially maybe even kill competition in the semiconductor industry. It was refuted by the Chinese regulators. There were also a lot of noise from European and Japanese regulators. The deal eventually collapsed, and SoftBank had to look elsewhere. And in the meantime, what happened was we got the U.S. CHIPS Act, and we got this conflict going on between the U.S. and China, and SoftBank sitting in Japan, and with Japan's latest stance against China on the semiconductor industry, it's very clear that SoftBank is turning away from China. They have been betting heavily on China. To me, it smells very... And they're selling off all their Chinese holdings, and now they're partnering up with Intel, which the U.S. government is very keen on to become this new powerhouse again in the U.S. on general purpose chips. So the news is here that SoftBank is trying to get Intel on board as a strategic investor in the Arm holdings, which is expected to do an IPO this year. So super interesting story. Watch that if you're interested in that part of the semiconductors industry. And then the final thing we're watching today, of course, is the overall semiconductors industry. We have the highest equity valuations in multiple decades in this industry. Clear bubble dynamics. Watch that inflation report is, of course, the key risk for this part of the market and something that could change sentiment today, in either direction.
Yeah, and then we have the names that we've been kind of talking about all week, but you put up Lennar's financials, I see here on slide 9.
Yeah, it's because...
In terms of the earnings, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. It's because we mentioned the other day that why is the stock price still doing so well? I mean, there are clearly some indicators on the housing market that is showing that maybe it shouldn't do as well. And I've put in here the annual figures, so for 2023 and 2024. I mean, even with lower revenue expected over the coming years, and look at the free cash flow of the business expected for this year, $3.7 billion, and $2 billion sounds a little bit too low for 2024. But let's say this is a company that can generate $3 billion of cash flow with the current revenue and with that compression. That's a pretty interesting free cash flow yield relative to the enterprise value. And we talk about a company with, $5.3 billion of debt, but they also have $4.2 billion in cash and equivalents. So they basically have net debt that is close to zero. So I think this is it's an interesting company. It's actually quite a profitable business model, even in this environment.
Wow. And then Adobe, another AI linked name because of some of their image processing. I wonder if it could put some artists out of work, though. But that's another issue. That is one of the fears supposedly around AI is that the productivity, sure, it's great, but if the productivity means you replace some more menial tasks, I guess that could be a risk for the number of licenses they sell. I'm just completely thinking off the top of my head, but I wonder if those considerations are in there.
This is just like years back when as soon as you put a blockchain or a crypto into your name or what you're doing, things just went monkey.
It's funny you say it because I just read this article this morning on the Bloomberg terminal that the Bloomberg was scanning through all these different articles, and commentaries from earnings releases and press statements, etc., from companies. And there's a very clear sign that if you use the word AI in your press release, there's a stock price reaction. And that's another artifact and echo from what we saw in 2000. Just put in web or the internet, and you're doing the right thing.
Hey, you have to think about next quarter's options vesting to be a little bit cynical for the executives. I think
you're very kind of cynical.
Short-term considerations there. Yes. Question is there a pivot point today for a week, 3 months? It's really interesting. I think this will end in an ugly situation, but the timing is always the critical part of all this. By the way, a funny indicator I saw in an FT article that I did not read, but was just scanning through and talking about where are we in the economy. They note that they want something extremely cyclical. RV sales, so these big beasts of vehicle that you take generally for retirees all over the United States, they're down 50% year on year. It's one of the worst years, if not the worst year, I think, in the chart that I saw of going back some 20 years or so. And that's on top of a minus 18% drawdown the prior year, although there was the 2021 the plus 40% of the prior year. But it's down a lot and the worst, almost the worst ever over the last year. So economic calendar for today, it is all about the U.S. CPI. The German ZEW is out this morning as well. It's just showing, if you look at those levels, the present situation, Eurozone is in a funk. So I think the ECB has a tough task in continuing to hike, but into an economy that's not really doing very well. We have the T-bond auction up today out of the Treasury. The auctions yesterday seemed orderly from what I read on the headlines. And then it's all about the FOMC, where, again, is the situation in the financial markets present in terms of the Fed's awareness? And is this 20% expectation for a rate hike justified. That goes up to more like 70%, I believe it is, or 21 basis points, whatever the math is there for the July meeting. So the market is still seeing this as a pause with another hike in July, but the forward guidance will be certainly as important as the actual decision to hike tomorrow. We'll talk a little bit more about that tomorrow, but for now, it's an interesting situation we have here in these global markets. And the Bank of Japan as well, that's another one that could be perhaps even more impactful than the FOMC if they decide to guide for something in the direction of tightening. I don't think the market would be well prepared for that on Friday. But we'll talk more about that later this week. For now, that's a wrap. We'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.